Welcome to Think Like a Nurse. This is the show created by Brooke Wallace. She's got 20 years as an ICU and organ transplant nurse, plus she's a clinical instructor and published author.
Yep, and our goal here is pretty straightforward.
We take those really complex nursing topics, you know the ones, and try to make them much easier for you to grasp, master, and use safely in practice.
Exactly.
So today, we're diving into a big one, a medication that's, well, incredibly powerful and definitely high stakes in any hospital setting. Furosemide. You probably know it as Lasix.
Oh yeah, Lasix. It's absolutely fundamental for managing fluids. But because it works so fast, the margin for error is just razor thin.
Right.
So we're not just going to give you the definition today. We really want to get into the critical details, you know, administration safety, the monitoring you have to do. This is what separates an okay nurse from a really great one when using this drug.
Okay.
We want you to leave this conversation feeling prepared for those tough clinical calls involving furosemide.
All right, let's start unpacking it then. Core mechanics first. Furosemide, it's classified as a high-ceiling loop diuretic. Now, that name itself, high-ceiling loop, it signals potency, speed. But what does loop actually mean physiologically for the patient?
The loop part is crucial. It tells you exactly where this drug goes to work in the kidney, the thick ascending limb of the loop of Henle.
Okay.
And the mechanism is pretty fascinating. It inhibits something called the sodium-potassium chloride symporter.
The symporter, okay.
Essentially, yeah, it slams a door shut on the kidney's ability to reabsorb salt, sodium, and chloride mainly. And since water always follows sodium, well, if you block salt reabsorption, you dramatically increase how much water gets flushed out in the urine.
So you get this really powerful, fast diuresis.
Exactly. Very powerful, very rapid.
Which makes it perfect for those acute situations where you've got way too much fluid volume.
Precisely. I mean, yes, we use it for chronic fluid retention too, like the edema you see with heart failure, kidney disease, liver cirrhosis.
Right, the chronic stuff.
But it's absolutely indispensable in critical situations. Especially acute pulmonary edema, you need to get that fluid off fast to help the patient breathe.
Makes sense.
And sometimes it's used as an add-on therapy for really stubborn hypertension, too.
Okay, so that rapid action, that's also where the risk comes in, especially comparing routes.
Yeah.
You mentioned IV needs intense monitoring. What's the timing difference we need to keep in mind?
Oh, the difference is huge. Stark, really. Orally, you're looking at an onset of maybe 30 to 60 minutes, and the effect lasts, you know, 6 to 8 hours.
Okay, hours.
But 3-5. Intravenously, onset is within 5 minutes.
Wow, 5 minutes.
Yeah. And the duration is much shorter, maybe about 2 hours total. So the nursing takeaway here is critical. That 5-minute onset means you have to anticipate immediate, potentially massive fluid shifts.
Which could mean?
Severe hypotension right away. You absolutely must be right there checking that blood pressure immediately after an IV push.
Okay, let's talk administration safety then, starting with oral. Doses are typically, what, 20 to 80 milligrams daily?
Yeah, that's a common range.
So besides taking it with food for GI upset, what's the really crucial timing point?
This is a big one for patient adherence, and honestly, it gets missed sometimes. You have to give oral doses before 2 p.m.
Before 2 p.m. Why so specific?
Nocturia. Think about it. If the patient is getting up 5-6 times a night to pee because the Lasix is kicking in,
and their sleep is wrecked.
Totally wrecked. And then they're much more likely to just skip doses or stop taking it altogether. So protecting their sleep is actually key to making sure they stick with the medication. It's a classic unclex point too.
Good tip. Okay, now the big IV danger. Ototoxicity. Hearing loss. Tinnitus. Potentially permanent. Why is this so dependent on how the nurse gives the IV dose?
It's a classic dose-dependent and, crucially, rate-dependent side effect. If you push IV furosemide too fast, especially the higher doses,
what happens?
You basically disrupt the fluid balance within the inner ear, and that increases the risk of this really serious, potentially irreversible damage to their hearing.
Okay, so there must be a hard rule.
There is. It's concrete. IV furosemide must be given slowly, no faster than 10 milligrams per minute.
10 milligrams per minute. So if you have an 80 milligram dose, that's an 8-minute push.
That's right. 8 minutes standing there, pushing slowly. It feels like a long time, but it is absolutely non-negotiable for patient safety.
And for smaller doses?
Even for smaller doses, say less than 40 milligrams, you still give it over 1 to 2 minutes minimum.
Okay. So what's the nursing action here?
First, assess their baseline hearing before you give the drug. Ask them about any existing issues. Then you instruct the patient, tell them clearly to report any change in their hearing immediately, even mild ringing, tinnitus, fullness, anything.
And if they report something during the infusion.
Your priority is immediate. Stop the infusion right then and notify the provider.
Got it. Stop first. What about other admin details, light sensitivity and the sulfa allergy thing?
Yeah, good points. Furosemide, the drug itself in the vial or IV bag, is light sensitive, so prolonged exposure can make it less potent. We use those amber bags or protective covers.
Standard practice.
And the sulfa allergy. Okay, furosemide is technically a sulfonamide derivative, but the actual cross-reactivity with sulfa antibiotics is pretty rare, statistically.
But you still need to check.
Absolutely. You have to clarify the patient's allergy history. What kind of reaction did they have? Was it just a mild rash, or was it something severe like anaphylaxis? You need that detail to weigh the risk before you give it.
Right, that's critical thinking beyond just memorizing drug classes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's shift gears to maybe the biggest clinical trap, fluid and electrolyte imbalances. Where's our number one monitoring priority?
Always, always hypokalemia, low potassium, anything below 3.5 mEq.
Why potassium first?
Because potassium is critical for the heart's electrical stability, low potassium can directly lead to serious arrhythmias. You'll see ECG changes. It's a major cardiac risk.
And what signs are we looking for in the patient?
You're watching for things like muscle cramps, profound muscle weakness, fatigue. Those are key signs.
Okay, so you check the labs. Potassium's low, let's say 3.2, or maybe their blood pressure has dropped way down. What's the absolute rule regarding the furosemide dose?
This is a firm hold criteria. If potassium is less than 3.5, or if their systolic blood pressure is less than 90/60, you must hold the dose.
Hold end.
Hold and notify the provider immediately. Giving that dose could push them into a dangerous arrhythmia or cause a serious fall from the low BP.
And it's not just potassium we worry about, is it?
No, definitely not. You're also looking out for low sodium, hyponatremia, low calcium, hypocalcemia, and low magnesium, hypomagnesemia.
And there's a tricky interaction between potassium and magnesium, right?
Yes, this is a really important clinical pearl. Low potassium can actually mask low magnesium, and magnesium is also vital for cardiac rhythm stability.
So low K plus and low MG plus plus is extra bad.
Tremendously bad for the heart. Plus, you often can't even effectively correct the low potassium until you replace the magnesium first. So a sharp nurse keeps an eye on both, making sure magnesium levels, usually want them above 1.7 mEq, are okay, especially in cardiac patients.
Okay, away from labs for a second. The simplest tool we have is the daily weight. What are the common mistakes patients make when tracking weight at home?
Daily weights are fantastic, probably the best non-invasive way to track fluid status. Remember, roughly 1 kilogram of weight change equals about 1 liter of fluid.
Right, 1 kilo equals 1 liter.
The big pitfall is inconsistency. We have to be super clear with instructions. Weigh yourself daily, use the same scale at the same time each day, usually morning after voiding, before breakfast, wearing the same amount of clothing.
Consistency is key.
And document in kilograms if possible, it's more precise. They need to know to report any sudden gain, usually more than 2 pounds in a day or maybe 5 pounds in a week. That signals fluid retention is coming back.
We're always walking that tightrope, treating overload without causing dehydration. What are the flags that tell us we push too far, cause too much diuresis?
You're looking for signs of hypovolemia, basically. Dizziness, really dry mouth, maybe decreased urine output, oliguria, and obviously a drop in blood pressure.
And that rapid fluid shift leads to another risk.
Orthostatic hypotension, absolutely. Especially dangerous for older adults, that sudden drop in blood pressure when they stand up.
So what do we do?
We need to check orthostatic vital signs, looking for that systolic drop of more than 20 mmHg when they go from lying, sitting to standing, and implement fall precautions immediately, teaching them to rise slowly, dangle their feet first. That's core nursing education here.
Okay, let's talk drug interactions. Our patients are almost never on just one med. What are the high-risk combos with furosemide we absolutely need to know? Digoxin first.
Digoxin is number one for sure. If furosemide causes hypokalemia, that low potassium, it dramatically increases the patient's sensitivity to digoxin. That spikes the risk of serious digoxin toxicity, leading to those life-threatening arrhythmias. So if a patient is on both, potassium monitoring has to be extra vigilant.
Okay, digoxin and potassium, got it.
Yeah.
What about lithium? and NSAIDs.
Right. Furosemide can actually reduce how well the kidneys clear lithium. So that can lead to lithium building up to toxic levels.
Oh, right.
And NSAIDs, ibuprofen, naproxen, those common ones, they basically fight against furosemide. They can reduce its diuretic effect, making our treatment less effective.
It's so counterproductive.
Exactly. And one more big one. Aminoglycoside antibiotics, like gentamicin. Combine those with furosemide, and you've got a recipe for increased risk of ototoxicity from both drugs.
Double trouble for hearing.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
What about diet? We know hypokalemia is a risk. Should everyone on Lasix just load up on bananas?
Well, unless they have kidney failure where potassium is already restricted, then yes, generally we encourage potassium-rich foods. Bananas, oranges, spinach, avocados, potatoes.
The usual suspects.
Yeah, but the education needs to fit the patient. You know, culturally appropriate advice matters. And critically, you have to ask about herbal supplements during medication reconciliation.
Like what?
Licorice root is a big one. Some supplements contain it, and it can actually worsen hypokalemia, potentiate the effect of furosemide. If you don't know they're taking it, you're missing a risk factor.
Good point. Always ask about herbals. Let's touch on special populations. Starting furosemide in older adults need extra caution.
Absolutely. Geriatric patients often have less physiological reserve, maybe some baseline kidney function decline. They're just more sensitive to the diuretic effects and the electrolyte shifts.
More prone to problems.
Much more vulnerable to dehydration, which can then lead to confusion, dizziness, falls. So we typically start low, maybe 10 or 20 milligrams, and monitor them really closely for any confusion or dizziness suggesting we've overdone it.
And for patients with diabetes, any specific watchouts?
Yes, furosemide can potentially cause hyperglycemia, raise blood sugar levels.
Oh, interesting.
So for diabetic patients, you need to be extra vigilant with blood glucose monitoring. Report any significant upward trends to the provider because their insulin or other diabetic meds might need adjusting.
Okay, this all leads to the ultimate nursing skill, prioritization. Let's take an acute scenario. Patient comes in with flash pulmonary edema, gasping for air, O2 sats are low. Where does furosemide 4B fit in your immediate actions?
Airway, breathing, circulation first, always. If they're hypoxic, getting oxygen on them is priority number one.
Oxygen first.
But furosemide 4B needs to follow almost immediately after that because you have to treat the underlying cause of the hypoxia, the fluid overload drowning their lungs.
Okay, but what if you give that IV push, slowly of course, and midway through the patient says, my ears are ringing. What's the priority now?
Priority instantly shifts. You stop the infusion immediately, then notify the provider. Preventing potentially permanent hearing damage becomes the most critical action right then.
Stop the push. Got it. Let's just recap those absolute hold the dose criteria one last time. When do you absolutely stop, hold that furosemide, and call a provider?
Okay, the big three. Low potassium, less than 3.5. Hypotension, systolic BP, less than 90-60. Or signs of acute kidney injury, like if their creatinine is suddenly climbing, or they stop making urine altogether, anuria. You assess that whole picture before giving the drug.
Check before you push. Makes sense. And finally, adherence. If patients struggle taking it at home, maybe skip doses because of the urination. What's the inevitable result?
Rebound edema. It's almost guaranteed. If they're non-adherent often because of the nocturia, sometimes cause two, their heart failure symptoms will worsen, fluid builds back up, and they often end up right back in the hospital.
So nurses need to.
We have to talk about those barriers. Why are they skipping doses? Reinforce the daily weights. Stress why those follow-up lab appointments are so crucial. It's part of the whole package.
Absolutely. Well, that really covers the essentials for furosemide. To wrap up, if you want to master this drug, remember these three pillars. One, really understand that powerful loop mechanism. Two, prioritize your monitoring BP, potassium, daily weights are key. And three, nail down that safe 5V administration rate. Slow push saves hearing.
And maybe one last thought to chew on, something for your clinical thinking. What happens when your patient with advanced heart failure seems to stop responding, even to max doses of furosemide?
Yeah, what does that mean?
That's likely diuretic resistance. A really sharp nurse recognizes this isn't just about pushing the dose higher. It might mean it's time for combination therapy, adding a different type of diuretic, like metolazone or maybe spironolactone. Recognizing when the standard therapy isn't working anymore, that's next level critical thinking.
That's a great point, thinking beyond the single drug. Excellent. Thank you so much for breaking all that down today.
My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us for this crucial conversation on furosemide safety and best practices. Be sure to check in with us again for more complex nursing topics made easy right here on Think Like a Nurse each week.